This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for business and IT professionals. To support this podcast, visit donation.ciops.com. This is episode 44 with Ishai Sagi. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and for this episode, I'm joined with another repeat interviewee from, I think it was March this year, Ishai Sagi. How are you going?
I'm fine. Thanks, Robert.
Good to have you back on. For those of you who can't remember, Ishai is a SharePoint MVP since 2001. He's been working very closely with SharePoint. He's based out of Canberra. He's also a solutions architect at Xintelligent Design. Does that about cover it, Ishai? Have I left anything else out?
That's about it. Xintelligent Design, that's exd.com.au, and if anyone wants to visit us.
Excellent. Well, what I've asked Ishai to come on and give us some information on is obviously we've had a release of SharePoint 2013 in line with the Office product. And SharePoint 2013, I suppose, more than being the latest iteration of SharePoint, certainly looks and feels very, very different at first glance from the previous version. I think that's all for the best, but I thought it's best if we get an expert on, probably just to run us through some of these differences and improvements and what to look out for, and then also to give us some information about how this new version of SharePoint will translate into the Office 365 environment. So I suppose that's a fairly large, encompassing
yes,
that we can have. I mean, we'll probably run out of time, no doubt, but I think you're probably the best person to get our audience some information on sort of what's happening with 2013. So, you know, where do we start with the new version of SharePoint?
Well, I'll try to do my best. We'll start, basically what I've done, I had to research SharePoint 2013 because I'm writing the next version of my book. I had two books in the past, SharePoint 2007 How To and SharePoint 2010 How To. Now I have to revise the 2010 version to a new edition to the 2013 How To. So I had to go chapter by chapter and try to figure out the most common elements that users come in contact with. What are they, and has anything changed in them? So we're looking both at what changed, but also are there new additions that end users need to know about. So I guess if we were to talk about everything that changed in 2013, we would run out of time, and we'd have to have four or five different podcasts. And at this point of time, I wouldn't call myself even an expert on it, because the version is too new and too big. So I suggest we'll focus on four different topics. One thing is some new concepts that were introduced in 2013. Then we'll talk about what's new for users who are readers, like when you were visiting a SharePoint 2013 site, what's new for you when you look around and click around. What's new for authors, so people who author documents, what are the new features? And then lastly, what's new for site managers? Of course, there's a lot more new for developers and administrators and things like that, but I guess there's a time and place for everything.
I suppose just before you kick off, how big is the change from SharePoint 2010 versus, say, going from, you know, SharePoint 2007 to 2010? Is it, you know, a bigger change? Is it in comparison to the jump to the previous version, how big a change is it?
That's a very difficult question to answer, because the changes, it's all relative. I would say that from the end user perspective, while there are very exciting changes that we'll talk about, it's not as much of a change as 2010 was from 2007. Mm-hmm. However, there's huge changes for developers and less so for administrators, but also there's some very exciting opportunities for administrators that we didn't have in 2010. So I would say a lot of changes happened behind the scenes where the end users won't notice them, but also we have some some changes for the end users that we'll see today, about today.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's get started. Why don't you let us know, you know, what are the some of the new stuff that we'll be seeing in 2013?
Well, so before we talk about the new stuff that you'll actually be seeing, I want to say some of the new concepts that were introduced. Every SharePoint version so far has introduced new concepts that you had to be familiar with the word, with the name before you could discuss them. For example, SharePoint 2007 introduced content types. So people who knew SharePoint 2003, you told them content types, they had no idea what you're talking about because that was introduced in 2007. Similarly, in 2010, we had managed metadata. It didn't exist in 2007. That's a new concept that we had to explain before we could go on and say, I'll look at that shiny new user interface. In 2013, there are a few new concepts, but that I would call radical. One of them, continuous scroll. So it's an option for the administrators to set up a search that continuously crawls the content of a SharePoint site. Basically almost real time. So as you upload a document, it will almost instantaneously show up in search. A concept called catalogs, which is going to be a huge thing that Microsoft is really pushing for us to use in SharePoint 2013, which is basically setting up a catalog of information and then using search to expose that information from everywhere. And for that, they gave us something called content by search web parts that that connect to the search index and show us the content from completely different sites. So you can have one site where you have the catalog of content, for example, catalog of products, but expose it in whatever site you want, including sites that are, for example, if your product catalog is in your intranet or let's say on your on-premise SharePoint, and then you have Office 365 that is connected in a hybrid configuration to your on-premise, you can actually show the information using the search service on the Office 365 on your internet site, even though the information is on your intranet site. So some very exciting web parts and search capabilities that are coming in 2013. So if you remember one thing from what I just said, remember catalogs and search, that's going to be big. Now, there are some naming conventions that have changed. We now don't use the word templates anymore. In fact, a lot of names that we used to use in SharePoint have been replaced with one word, which is app. Almost everything is an app. And my colleague and business partner, Brian Farnhill, has a developer presentation where he just begins by saying app. And that's what developers are supposed to come up with. So instead of creating a list of template tasks, you are actually creating a tasks app. You're using the tasks app. That's the kind of naming convention that we have to get used to.
Do you think that's going to, you know, is that going to cause confusion for existing users? I mean, I've used it, and I mean, I understand it, and I understand why they're going to an app. But it seems to me that it's a fairly radical change to go from a, you know, a SharePoint document library, then have to go to a SharePoint document library app. I mean.
That's interesting. Why do you think they're going for the word app?
Well, I think the thing is that part of it is that the average user understands an app. You've got your app on your Windows phone. You've got your app on your iPad. You know, they associate it with an enclosed environment. So, and again, I think the other thing too perhaps is that the other side of it is obviously that with the 2013 release of Office, including SharePoint, you've got now the apps marketplace. So now you've got developers who are able to push their solutions into the marketplace, which will show up on Excel or in SharePoint and allow a user to add it. So I see that, again, the extension of this app idea is the allowing of external third parties to develop these add-ons or these what used to be web parts or templates or whatever we used to call them, but now basically calling them an app. So it makes a lot of sense in that respect to now call everything an app and then just extend, say, well, these are, you know, default apps that you get with a product, but now there's this new library or this new access to all these third-party apps that are coming down the line.
I agree totally. I think aligning the naming convention across the board with Windows 8, with Office 2013 and all of that, well, they had to align the naming convention so that not to confuse users. And I think, I don't know if it will cause confusion to for users who are used to Shift, because the interface is slightly different when you, instead of saying I want to create a list, you have to say I want to create an app. And I guess experienced users will continue looking for how do I create a list, instead of realizing that that button for creating an app is actually the button they're looking for. I guess time will tell. Well, I'll have to be interviewed again after the first project of implementing and training.
Well, I think it's what I find interesting is that, you know, we look at SharePoint and the radical, you know, perhaps radical changes or the major changes they've made, but it's not just SharePoint. They've changed, obviously, Windows 8. They've changed Office. It's interesting that they've taken this risk and made such large changes. And you can see at the back end, if you step away from it, that the alignment that you talked about and getting everything in sync and getting the fluid interface and all that sort of Metro-style stuff makes a lot of sense, but it's going to freak a lot of people out. There's no question at all.
Yeah. I agree. I'm seeing a lot of negative feedback on Windows 8 from people who are saying that they don't like it, but after a few days of using it, it's going to be very hard for me to go back.
Yeah, it's like the good old ribbon interface in, you know, Office. When they brought that in, there was mass hysteria. But the reality is, once you use it for, like I said, you know, a couple of days, you realize how much better it is. So, you know, again, in 6 months' time or whatever, that we could all be saying this was such a brilliant move by Microsoft, and, you know, why did it take so long and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, look, in the long run, I think it is a good thing, but it will take obviously a while for it to move into people who have become entrenched in doing things a certain way. So very interesting.
I think it's probably also tied in with hardware. The more people have touchscreen enabled devices, the more they'll grow to accept the new interface choices.
True, very true. Yeah.
In any case, continuing on, we do have one thing that I get excited about, which is a reinvented datasheet view. So basically, Microsoft chucked out the old datasheet view, which was a quick launch. It was the datasheet view, and it was an ActiveX. So it would only work, first of all, if you were using Internet Explorer, because other browsers don't support ActiveX controls. And it would only work if you had Microsoft Office installed on your client machine that you were browsing from. Two things that were very annoying to a lot of clients, a lot of users. Not to mention the fact that in some cases, communication between the ActiveX on the client to the server got broken, and because of network configuration. And Microsoft chucked all that out and put in a datasheet view that uses HTML proper, so you don't need any client install. It's not relying on a specific browser. You can use it across different browsers. And instead of calling it datasheet view, they call it quick edit view now. So we do need to get used to the word quick edit. Although, if you get down to some configuration screens in SharePoint, you still see the words datasheet view lingering around in some pages. But the official word is quick edit for now. So that's quite nice. I really love how in HTML you can drag and drop cells and or copy one cell and paste to many different cells, exactly like in Excel, and it's done very smoothly, very nicely.
And I think the other thing too I would comment generally is that Microsoft's, again, should be given kudos for the fact that they are moving this product, along with a lot of the others, to standard HTML5, JavaScript. I mean, basically, SharePoint 2013, from my understanding, is far more compatible with non-Microsoft browsers than previous versions of SharePoint.
Yeah, and that's true for every version. I mean, well, I guess SharePoint 2001 and 2003 didn't differ much. But since 2003, they've been adding support for different browsers more and more with every version. And 2013 is the, of course, it's the, as the year now is 2012, then the SharePoint 2013 is the pinnacle. I can't wait to see what will happen in 3 or 4 more years. At the moment, we have very nice cross-browser support.
Mm.
Yeah. Another new thing is a site mailbox that basically turns a site into gives a site and a mailbox in exchange and allows you to send emails to the site, and then the emails get processed in the site. And see the email as threads, as a discussion thread in the site itself. So that's a very nice and I'm sure to be a very useful feature of SharePoint 2013.
Now, is that mailbox a discussion list or is it a completely different app?
I think it's a separate app, but I think it utilizes features from the discussions, but don't quote me on that.
Okay.
Okay. I still need to configure it myself. Cross-farm permissions. I think that's a mistake in my notes, and I need to get rid of it. I'm trying to recall what was that. No, sorry, that's something for web parts for developers, where we can set permissions for what web parts can do. So leave that alone. This is not a developer discussion. Cross-site publishing, that's really exciting, and that's what I was talking about earlier about the search and the content by search type web parts. Basically, in previous versions of SharePoint, we had something called content publishing that allowed, either developers or site managers or administrators to set up a publishing path to say whatever is written in one site overnight or when it's approved, push it to another site, so it would copy and paste to different sites, and that was used mostly for publishing. So you had a content authoring site for your intranet where people would author content, and then someone high up would approve the content, at which point it got pushed to a completely different site, which was the production site. That mechanism had a lot of problems with it, keeping stuff in sync and copying stuff, for example. It's a very complex mechanism if you think about it, especially if you're authoring one thing and it has a link to another, and only one of those things got approved. Do you publish? Do you not publish? And there were a lot of implementations that I heard about where that process was just not viable. What we have now is relying on search. As long as the two farms, the production and the pre-production, use the same search index, you can actually tell it once something is approved and is picked up by search in one farm, the other farm can show it on pages. And this is going to be a very big feature in SharePoint projects, I'm sure. The design manager is something new in SharePoint 2013 and something that I think a lot of people will be glad to hear about, which allows us to manipulate the design of a SharePoint site without SharePoint Designer by uploading templates, for HTML templates and JavaScript templates, not needing any Microsoft tool for site graphic design. So all the graphic designers who refuse to learn SharePoint design for SharePoint 2010 and 2007 don't have an excuse anymore for SharePoint 2013, because we basically give them a site and tell them use whatever application you want. This is the button where you upload your design through. And that's going to be very nice. And I can't wait to see what people come up with. It's also good for end users, not necessarily graphic designers, to just tweak the theme and the colors and come up with a site that visually looks more like what they want.
And of course, SharePoint Designer 2013 is available and is still a free download.
Yeah, it's still there, still a free download, and it's not going anywhere. because it's very useful for other tasks, not just designs or designing workflow. It's still SharePoint design workflow. So SharePoint design is not going anywhere. But in addition, we are supporting graphic designers who don't need a tool for workflow, or don't need a tool for content types and all kind of settings in SharePoint. They just want to upload their design and see how it's applied.
In your experience, do you find that there's more demand for branding, you know, changing the look and the feel? Is that something that's growing, or are people happy with the default look and feel, do you think?
In my experience, look and feel is the first thing that any project demands that we do. It's people are much more focused on look and feel than on functionality. And while that may sound surprising, if you think about it, that's the first thing the end users are confronted with when they go to a SharePoint site. And IT departments who have the responsibility to deliver a new system, they want to make sure that the user's first reaction is not, oh, this is boring. They want the first reaction to say, oh, this looks nice. So I guess branding, in my experience, is the number one thing in any SharePoint project, the first thing you need to implement. And if you're selling a SharePoint project, to come in the pre-sale meeting with a customized SharePoint example, a prototype that looks that uses the client's color scheme and maybe has some elements out of place, so that the client doesn't recognize, oh, this is SharePoint. That usually means a lot to the client, because a lot of clients don't realize that you can get to a very complex look and feel. And that means a lot. A lot of people find that very important. Mm-hmm. And they say, we don't want it to look like SharePoint. Mm-hmm. A good example of that, by the way, is a website we recently have done for a client of ours, Catholic Education Office in the Canberra and Goulburn region. So if the listeners just Google Catholic Education Office Canberra, they'll see their website, which is a SharePoint 2010 website, completely different design that you wouldn't recognize, this is SharePoint, except if you look at the source code of the page where you see all the style sheets and SharePoint commands. Mm-hmm. The last concept that I wanted to fling out there is device rules. So today in the mobile device world, we have so many devices that we need our websites to support. And by using device rules, we can actually configure a site to present itself differently to different devices. And that's all from the user interface. We don't have to go through configuration files on the servers or things like that. So Office 365, obviously, it was impossible for us to say, if someone's navigating with an iPad, I want it to look differently from an iPhone. That was impossible. Still is impossible in 365 until we get the 2013 upgrade. Once a 2013 upgrade kicks in, we will be able to do it on a side-by-side basis and say, this is the rule for the device. And it gets even better, and I'll cover it later on, where you can actually define for an image, per image that you put on the site, if the user has that device, I want to show that section of the image, because we know that that device has such and such resolution. So an iPhone has a smaller resolution than a laptop. We want to show a smaller bit of the image. We don't want to compress the image and ruin it, because there's parts of the image that are more important than background. So we can actually make the image still be relevant if you're looking at it through an iPhone or through a laptop or through a Windows 8 Surface device. Mm-hmm. So that's another very exciting and new concept that is new in 2013.
Okay, so there's obviously, you know, a significant amount of new stuff that's in there. And I mean, so what's the impact, as you talk about, for the people that use it day to day, the typical reader or whatever?
So readers, for readers, it's we are going to have some impact that's going to be different, and the user interface obviously looks a bit different. The first thing that readers will notice is the top navigation bar location. So let's talk about out-of-box, non-branded website. The top navigation is now located completely differently. The top banner is completely different. The top navigation, instead of being at the top of the page, it's actually part of the page now. It looks to be a part of the page. So we have the site logo on the left side, for example, and next to it we have the top navigation, and immediately below it the title of the site. So in the past, the top navigation was above the site logo, was on a separate line. Now it's part of the page content, as far as the user can see. And this is a requirement that came to me a lot in 2010 to merge the two and save on white space, especially when there's not a lot of links in top navigation. This could become a problem if we do have a lot of links in the top navigation and we want to take advantage of the full screen space. But of course, with the branding, we can achieve that. But the default now is to have it as part of the site itself and not on a separate page. I think it works for collaboration sites. It will work quite nicely. We have a nice little button for readers to focus on content, which hides navigation, basically goes just to the content of the page. It's like a zoom in on the page. And that's a new button that users will see in their toolbar. And I wonder if how useful that will be to
me. It is an interesting concept. I mean, it's sort of something you've got to click on and click off. And
yes.
I mean, obviously, you know, Microsoft Search indicates that, you know, maybe it was something that was required. It certainly seems a little bit strange, you know, to me. But maybe, I suppose, once you get away from the top level and start, you know, drilling into pages with lots and lots of information, or that, you know, a reader looks at every day, then it does begin to make some sense, I suppose. But again, an interesting little addition to this version of SharePoint that we haven't seen. And again, it'll be interesting to see how users actually adopt this.
I'll tell you what's strange for me is I would expect, next to that focus on content page, I would expect the font, a larger font, smaller buttons that are very useful on sites, especially governmental sites that need to conform with accessibility standards that require, because there are a lot of people who say, the default font is too small, and I don't want to have to use my glasses, can I make the font bigger? And I would have expected that to be part of the platform instead of relying on us developers to add those buttons.
No, it does make a lot of sense when you think about it. And as obviously, you know, as you move to devices as well, you know, how that sort of works on a device as well, because trying to view some of the content on a very small screen can be very, very difficult unless you've got that, you know, easy zoom in and zoom out. So, yeah, interesting.
Yeah. The next thing that end users will see that's different, we'll have a new page not found behavior. So in the past, SharePoint, if you went to a page that doesn't exist or just wrote gibberish in the address bar, the page not found experience was a bit lacking, because you got a full screen page with an error message in the middle and a back to site link. Now the page not found will actually show within the site context. So you still have the ribbon, you still have the navigation, you still have the site logo and the site navigation and the search button. So everything, it's not as annoying that you got thrown out of the site just because you typed a page that's not there.
I think it's less of a panic station. You know, like when you did used to type that, you got the big banner, you know, the big square box in the middle, and oh my god, you know, the whole thing's broken, what have I done, you know.
Yes.
Whereas this one's a case of, oh look, you didn't find that page, click somewhere else and keep navigating. So again, I think it is a very smart move, again, to obviously get users more familiar with the web interface. And it's probably typically what you see on websites too when they fail. You know, they come up with a nice little message saying, you know, you couldn't find this page, rather than panic.
Yes, and again, this is something that we used to have to implement in 2007 and 2010, especially in internet sites that we implemented. You had to build a custom one, and you had to have access to the server and configuration files and all kinds of setups. Now it's part of the site, and now it's part of the platform, and it's going to make life easier for people who are developing internet sites on Office 365, and that's brilliant.
Exactly.
Now, in the personal settings, users can change their display languages. So, if we install language pack for SharePoint, and I want, and if we're an international, although I guess this podcast is for small business, and I can't think of many that are international, but you can still have employees who prefer different languages for their menus.
Yeah, you'd be interested because I'm coming across a lot more people that, for example, they're, a small business or they're a satellite office, but they've got an office in China or they've got an office in Japan or Europe or whatever. So, again, the nature of the globalization means that, this additional language option is can be a really good option for many, many businesses. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, and it's not just the menus. You can actually choose different content and search languages so that the content will be displayed based on your preference if there's a translation services and configured and installed. Okay, with libraries and files. So this is another chapter of my book. What about readers doing libraries and files? So first of all, the site content page. So previously in SharePoint 2010 or 2007, if you wanted to see what's the content of the current site, you went site actions, site content, view all site contents, or you had a all site contents link on the navigation bar. So you can still do that, but now the look of that content page is completely different. It's no longer a table showing you the lists and libraries as rows in a table. But instead, it's like, well, I shouldn't say Metro, but it's Windows 8 style page with boxes for each list and for each library. So again, finger friendly, but not necessarily very intuitive for users who are used to the old one. So we are going to see a bit of a learning curve where people get used to that. But yeah, we have a completely different look and feel for the site content page. The next thing, I guess it's less for readers, but more for authors, but there's the ability to upload multiple files. In 2010, it was you had to click on the ribbon, but instead of clicking on upload document, you had to open dropdown and choose upload multiple documents. That option is now gone. Instead, we have an option called Upload Using Windows Explorer, which opens the list, the library in Windows Explorer, and you can drag and drop files. There's another much more exciting, I guess, improvement in this area, but we'll keep that for in a few bits. So when we get to the what's new for content authors. Now, this is a very and the next thing is a very nice improvement I love and I think end users will love in 2013. When you go to a library or a list, but let's talk about libraries. When you go to a library, aside from the search this site or search this in the navigation bar, at the top of the page, you also have as part of the library Find a file search box, which automatically it knows to search. Not only is it searching only in the document library, it doesn't go to a different page. It actually filters the view that you're looking at for the document library that you're on, which is brilliant, which is what users have been asking us to develop for them all these years, since SharePoint 2001, a search box dedicated to the current view that you're on. And I think users will be very excited about that, and they'll find it very useful. View selector has changed location, and this being an audio podcast makes it very hard for me to describe it. But instead of being in the ribbon as part of the breadcrumbs, it's actually we have a new location for it, which is three dots that are next to that search box that I just mentioned. So you get you have the view name, you got three dots that is an actual pop-up menu. And the three dots thing is something, a recurring theme, a visual thing in SharePoint 2013, which if you see three dots, if you click on them, it will open a drop-down menu. So that's another new thing that people will need to get used to, that those three dots are actually a pop-up menu and you need to click it to see options. It gets the same when we look at properties of a file. When we hover over the name of a file, then we get three dots to get the menu that we were used to, that was the on hover menu, and then you had to click the drop down triangle-y thing.
It seems that Microsoft have, you know, it's not the right term, but have buried a lot of the options much further down. Like you've got to go in, you know, three dots and three dots again to find maybe checkout or delete or something like that. It seems to me as though that they've, again, you know, perhaps put another level of options in between that people can go to. So obviously the most common ones are, you know, the first three dots, but then the more advanced ones are another three dots or another level down. Well,
here's an interesting exercise in website design. Let's say you want to show a navigation menu that shows several levels of navigation. So traditionally that's used with flyouts. So if you hover your mouse over the first level and there's a content underneath it, a flyout appears over the page or over the contents, and then you can move your mouse and choose a link under that, or maybe there's another sublink and another sublink, and SharePoint always had that. Now, here's the challenge. The challenge is, how do you do that while supporting touch devices that don't use a mouse when there is no mouse hover? And if you click the first level, it actually navigates to that first level. It doesn't open the flyout. And people with the iPhones and iPads have been feeling that pain for ages. Now, my thinking is that Microsoft are solving the flyout issue by introducing this new design concept of the three dots. However, they haven't done it across the board. So navigation will still have flyouts, for example, instead of having three dots that you have to click on next to each one, because it just doesn't make sense. And I haven't seen a good implementation of a flyout menu on any site. I'm not talking about SharePoint.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't think about the fact of moving to more devices, moving to tablets and moving away. Yeah, that is a very good point. And obviously, that seems to be why they've made some of these interface changes, to take advantage of that or make it easier for those sort of users. So very interesting.
Still doesn't explain why we're replacing the triangle with three dots. But I'm guessing the three dots is a convention in computer development, where like you have the browse three dots, meaning it will open a menu, a dialogue. So I guess they're trying to align to that convention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a new document link is at the top of the view. It used to be when you went to a document library and you had a new item or new announcement or new document, you had that at the bottom of the view. So if you already had documents or announcement in there, you had to scroll all the way down for the new button, or you had to use the ribbon. Now they just switched it so that the new link is at the top of the view, before the view, so you don't have to scroll all the way down if you came into the list to create something new, and you don't need to go to do switch ribbons. So it's still so it's less clicks and less scrolling.
Yeah, and that makes obviously sense. As the list and as the library gets larger and larger and larger, having to scroll right down the bottom to quickly, you know, not because most users add a document or add an item by scrolling to the bottom of the list and hitting that hyperlink. So that does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's making life easier for the users, which is that's the job description. Okay, list and item. So we discussed the new item link at top of view. Also, if you go into a list, there's an edit list button or link at the top of the view next to the new item. And edit list switches to that new data sheet view replacement, the quick edit view. So that's very useful. Instead of putting it in the ribbon, well, in addition to putting it in the ribbon, the problem with the ribbon is that a lot of users don't investigate what's in the ribbon. By putting it right there in front of the user's place, edit list, what does that do? Let's click on it and start editing a lot of items instead of one item at a time. It makes it more accessible to users who were afraid to try to find it in the past or were not aware of it. The default setting, this is curious. Default setting for a list is not to open dialogues anymore, but when you click on the list item. So it's actually opening it within the list, but keeping it, well, I find it a bit hard to describe. Okay, maybe we'll get back to this one when I think of a way
Yeah,
to.
I think unfortunately, like I said, the fact that we're doing audio rather than visual does limit it. So if you do get hung up, let's just keep moving on. It's probably the easiest thing.
And I have to say another thing that I like about in document libraries is when you install Office Web Apps, which is an optional install, and you need a separate server. So I'm not sure how many small business servers will have that. But a very useful tool that allows people to view and edit office documents online without the client, so on the browser. When you click on a link to a document, it doesn't automatically open the document. It has a pop-up, and that pop-up shows you a preview of the document using the Office Web App. So it actually shows you a preview of the document with the actual document contents, and then it has the choices where do you want to edit it in browser, do you want to edit in Word, do you want to edit the properties, and all kind of things like that.
So, I mean, just for listeners, a bit of background was that in the 2010 version, you could download if your client had access to volume licensing, they are entitled to get an add-on for SharePoint 2010, which was called Office Web Apps, which allowed them basically to view and potentially edit documents in a browser. Now, that was enabled in the current version of Office 365, and depending on the plan, you can obviously get that. But that is part of a component that came with SharePoint. Now, the downside for small business users was that Office Web Apps was not supported on small business server, so you couldn't put it on the small business server anyway. Now, the 2013 version, what's happened is that the Office Web Apps has now moved into the realm where it not only works with SharePoint, it now also works with Exchange. So that now means that it runs on its own hardware. You can't install it on a SharePoint 2013 service. You can only get it and add it, but it needs its separate server, as was mentioned. Now, to me, in the small business environment, again, this points to the fact that, you know what, Office Web Apps, all these document previews, all this nice stuff is enabled by default out of the box with Office 365. You don't have to worry about it. So again, to me, these great features and functionality, if you try to do it on premise, especially in a smaller environment that may only have a single server or, you know, a limited budget, again, the Office 365 is such a great option because all of this stuff is enabled and working out of the box. So,
Exactly, configured. I have to say, with Office Web Apps, I installed it on my own virtual machine and configured it to work with the data virtual machine, which is SharePoint. And if I could follow the articles on MSDN to make it work, and I'm a developer, not an administrator, so all those configuration tasks, I usually have one of my expert employees do it for me. But if I could follow that, then anyone can follow that. It's actually a very sensible installation
okay.
process.
I mean that again. That's good feedback for those that do want to go down that sort of path. So very interesting.
So if someone needs help with that, even I can help. That's as simple as that. Okay, moving along. I realize that we probably don't want to get bogged down too much in detail, and we do have a time to go. Search in SharePoint was significantly improved, and fast search was incorporated into it, and we have refiners that are very visual and very useful. So when I say refiners, I mean when I do a search for a piece of text in a SharePoint site, it shows me the list of documents, but then it also, SharePoint 2013 analyzes the result set and suggests to me, hey, I noticed that that your result set has documents and web pages. Do you want to filter on the result type to show only documents or only web pages? I noticed that three users have been writing most of the content in here. Do you want to only see people documents that where the author was Ishai, for example? But then these are normal refiners. This is where it becomes cool. If it recognizes that the modification data, for example, is a lot of documents share one modification date, and a lot of other documents share another modification date, it will show you a graphic representation showing how many documents have been changed in a particular date, and show you a graph of different dates, how many documents are there, allowing you to click on the graph and thereby filter based on that modification date. And even do a range where instead of clicking on the graph, you can, under the graph, it will show a line where you can move, drag and drop the two lines to say from this date to this date. And you can see on the graph how many documents will be part of that result set even before refining it, which is very useful, obviously, when you search for a large number of documents.
Well, I think, again, one of the things that's overlooked in SharePoint, and, you know, the killer app for a lot of, especially small businesses that don't have it, is search. You know, one of the big features of SharePoint is everything you put in there is searchable. And as you've mentioned earlier on, it's potentially now able to go out and search local content as well. So again, you're bringing this into an interface, a web design that many users are familiar with, their external search engines that search the internet. Now they can search their internal data with this sort of power and visual and drag and drop. And, you know, again, I think this is one of the big areas that a lot of resellers and a lot of clients overlook is the power this brings.
Yep, exactly. There has been a lot of changes in the social features of SharePoint, but I think we can leave that maybe for a separate podcast.
So just a quick one on that. What's your the Microsoft just purchased? What's the social extra?
It's not Yammer, is it?
Yeah, Yammer. Yeah. What's your thinking on Yammer? Was that a good or a bad thing?
You're asking the person who's running a small company if the large enterprise that's the biggest company in the world has made a smart business move. Not for me to say. I don't know. I think Yammer is going to be very useful in large companies. I can't see much point for it for the small business, because the small business, if you invest in something, invest in Link. I think that that makes more sense.
Okay. It's, you know, one of the things.
Enterprises. I can definitely see that working across the enterprises.
Yeah, a lot of people do mention it because they had, you know, it obviously made the news. And one of the interesting features I've heard about is you can now invite external parties into a Yammer conversation. So again, you know, you've got these threaded conversations, but with Yammer, you can now invite a external third party without having to give them a login and all this sort of stuff. So it may be very interesting, but no, again, just interested on your take on that. So,
I'm the wrong person to ask about social features. I do use Twitter, and if people want to follow me, it's at Ishai Shaggy. But I mostly use that to whenever something funny comes up in my head. Let's talk about what's new for authors, so people who are actually adding stuff to the site or managing the site's content. So first of all, in libraries and lists, we have a new configuration option called re-index list, which basically flags to the search server, hey, I've made a change here, please pick it up as soon as possible. So that's something new that people who are familiar with SharePoint 2010 will find new in 2013. The item context menus with preview for documents are already mentioned. So if you have if you have Office web app, you will see a preview for documents. If you don't have an Office web app, you'll see a blank pop-up menu with just the options to edit the document and not without a preview. We already talked about the quick edit. But we haven't talked about something very exciting, which is drag and drop upload. So I mentioned before that we have the ability to go and add documents with Explorer, with Windows Explorer. But you can put the website, have a look at, navigate to a document library, see a document library on the site, push that window, the browser window, to the side of your monitor, open Windows Explorer, select a few documents from your My Documents or wherever, and drag and drop them into the browser, into the library, and they will be uploaded for you. This is, and this works across browsers. So you don't need to have any particular browser. I used it in Chrome, I used it in Firefox, and it works perfectly regardless of the browser you use. You just drag and drop documents into the web page. And I see that as like one of the biggest improvements for end users for SharePoint ever. This is something that users need. And yeah, as soon as we tell them that's available, that's going to be fair.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. When you see it in use, it does make a lot of sense. So yeah, I think that's, again, like, I agree with you. I think the main thing is just getting users used to that. But again, that is a very significant feature that's been added. Yeah.
That's not totally relevant. Authoring pages. So if you're a page author and editing a page, all editing elements changed a bit where they are on in the ribbon. So it will take a little bit of getting used to, but not too much. There's a few new things in the ribbon, like embed code and app part insert options. So instead of adding, in addition to adding a web part, you can also add an app part, which is very similar. But embed code is very, very nice when you have websites like, I don't know, Picasa or Flickr or all kind of websites that Facebook. So Facebook gives you an embed code for the like button, if you want to put the like button. So now in SharePoint, when you're editing a page, you have the ability to say from the ribbon, insert, embed code, put in the HTML that Facebook gave you to embed, click OK, and voila, it all works. Of course, you could do that in 2010, 2007, but it used to be a bit awkward because you had to find the correct web part that doesn't strip away the JavaScript and things like that. Now it's part of the menu, and that makes it so much better. Mm-hmm. You have a bit more options when adding video, including embed video. So all the YouTube embed is already there. So you can either use the embed code or you can go to the video and audio insert options and say, I want to embed audio or video that's already somewhere on the internet. And yes, that's basically it for authoring pages. We have a few new web parts. There's a timeline web part to show tasks as a timeline. And we have a lot of search-driven content web parts that I talked about earlier that show information from the search index as if there are actually articles. So you don't have to have the user click on a link to display to show the whole article. You can actually show the whole article using a web part, but the information comes from search and not from a particular page. And that's going to be very big, and we'll see a lot of search-driven websites in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Security. So not much change in security. So all the people who've been waiting for the deny access security setting, that doesn't exist in SharePoint 2013. We lost it with SharePoint 2003. So since SharePoint 2001, we didn't have deny access. But we do have a share with dialog. And now, instead of calling it permissions, it's called shared with. It's still the same, but moving to the internet, moving to the cloud, moving to sharing, like in Office, you now share a document. You don't send it. You share, and then in the sharing options, you can share it over a link, like how we're doing this meeting right now, this podcast recording, or you can share it via link, or you can share it by sending. Same thing in SharePoint. The SharePoint site is shared. It's not about security and permissions. It's about sharing it with someone. So that's the new term for setting permissions on the SharePoint site. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the dialogues are they are a bit new. People, I think, will find them very intuitive. Basically, you have the option to invite people, which is basically giving them permission to the site. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, pretty similar to 2010. The user picker has been redesigned. So when you are editing the properties of a list item or a document, and the property type is of type user, so you have to select a user, it now has an autocomplete. So you can start typing the name of the user, and will do a search for what you are typing as you're typing, and suggest to you the people you might be looking for. So instead of you having to completely type the person to check name, you actually get a much better interface now. Now, what else is exciting? Okay, let's talk. Let's bring it to an end by talking about what's new for site owners or site managers. First of all, when creating list of libraries, I already said you're not creating a list of library. You're adding an app. So you have to get used to that if you're a site manager. What you're looking for is add an app, not create list. We do have new types of lists, but they're not. It's only two templates two app templates that have been added, but nothing very significant. It's like a promoted links app that basically shows links as tiles in the Windows 8 style. And there's an app for circulation, which will actually I'm quite curious to see that one in action, especially in the context of small businesses and Office 365. Circulation is something that you add an announcement kind of thing, a title and a body, and you say, this is when it's due, is it confidential, do we allow editing? And then you type in the recipients, and it actually sends an email to everyone you typed in the recipient saying, this is what this person has written. So it's like writing email from within the SharePoint list, and that's meant to circulate like, hey, we have a newsletter kind of thing.
Interesting.
It's a newsletter functionality, and I can't wait to see how it works in Office 365, if we can use it and make that our newsletter function. New site templates, again, site templates are apps. So when you create a site, an app, we do have a site for developers. So to build, test, and publish apps for Microsoft Office. We have a project site with status, communication, artifacts about projects, all kind of things about project. We have a community site, which is discussions, and it's configured around the discussion list, but with all kind of web parts or controls that show we have 10 votes on this and all kind of.
I'm really excited about this particular one because you've got things like badges and scores and awards and it really I think will potentially garner a lot of feedback from people. You know, obviously they're more willing to contribute if you gamify the whole experience. So I think that that community site template, you know, has a lot of application. I'm very excited by that one.
Exactly. Another thing that excites me is the product catalog, which I already mentioned before. So you can create a site that is meant to host a product catalog. Where you create products, you upload images for the products and so on, and then you publish them using a search to other sites and manage it from one location so that tons of other sites can show information about your products using the search index. So very fast, very productive. Navigation, this is semi-exciting. First of all, editing navigation in team sites. So if your organization doesn't have publishing sites, in SharePoint 2010, 2007, the editing navigation was very limited. Now it's more accessible in the and it's much easier to edit the navigation in team sites, even if you just have foundation. Mm-hmm. The next bit is what I'm semi-excited about, is managed metadata-based navigation. So this allows you to go to the managed metadata store, create a term set, for example, called navigation for sites for our intranet, and then start to create terms. Well, you have to tell the term set you are going to be used for navigation, and then you can start create terms in a hierarchy, and it's practically endless hierarchy. You're not limited to two levels like the SharePoint navigation in publishing sites was. So you can build it and add links and sublinks to those, and then go to your website and say use that term set as your navigation source. These are the links that you should be showing as navigation. This has a lot more features that I don't want to get into because our time is short, including making the URLs simple. So the URLs no longer have to display /pages/default.
Okay.
So you can use that to say to simplify the URLs. So they just say /home. That's it. No SPX or nothing like that. Short URLs. It makes more sense. Users will love that. So that's a big feature.
Mm-hmm.
I say I'm semi-excited about it because the thing that would have gotten me all ecstatic about it is if we were able to share navigation term sets between site collections.
Of course.
Yeah, we're not, and that's a bit sad. Mind you, I think to develop an application that synchronizes, that copy pastes from one master term set to a lot of other term sets, one for each site collection, will be a lot easier and a lot more manageable than doing it the way we do it today in SharePoint 2010, which is go through all the site collections and synchronize their navigation structure.
Mm-hmm.
So, very excited that this is possible. We have quite a few new content types that come in by default. No need to go through them. Things like phone call, memo, and circulation that I already mentioned, time card, and things like this. That's basically it. And I think this is the last thing. Yeah. So the last thing I want to mention, I already mentioned it before, is image rendition templates, which allows me to upload one image to the image library in the site, and then I can say I want to create different renditions for this image. So, for example, I can create templates for the image, saying, okay, the first template is for iPads, and then I can go to a specific image and say, okay, if someone opens a page that shows this image on an iPad, I want to show this part of the image. I don't want you to shrink or expand or make my image ugly because it has to fit a different resolution. I want to show a specific part of the image. And in my presentation I did in the SharePoint Saturday Canberra, I showed an example. I took a picture of my dog climbing a tree. I know I have a very strange dog. Then I uploaded it to a site, and I showed how if I change the resolution on my computer, then suddenly it's a very small picture and hard to see what it is. It's just an orange blob with a green background. But then I created some image renditions saying if the resolution is very high, use focus in on the dog itself and don't show the rest of the background, which people don't care about. They want to see my dog climbing a tree. So being able to define different widths, different heights, you basically crop the picture and define a template for it on the picture itself. And that's fantastic. I can't wait to use that on production internet sites.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, that's all I wanted to talk about today.
All right, so obviously there's, again, a huge amount of information, and we do need to round it off, obviously. There's far more than we could plan for in the time that we've given. But I suppose to finish it off, is all the stuff you've talked about here basically available on-premise and through Office 365?
I suspect so. So I'm still waiting for my 365 to be eligible for a upgrade. We have tested quite a lot of it in the preview, and that worked. Obviously, there are things that may or may not be included, and I can't tell for sure. Considering the fact that my books are aimed at end users, there will be most of these things are part of foundation. Some things, yes, are part of publishing features. So I think image renditions will be part of publishing features, so not necessarily going to be available. I can't wait to see if they are or not. But most of these things are part of the platform. These are new things in the platform that will be available in 365. By the way, one huge feature that I forgot to mention, and maybe if we have a few minutes, we can talk about it. Otherwise, maybe leave it till next time. Is SkyDrive, SkyDrive and SkyDrive Pro, which is integration between the Microsoft Office client and SharePoint, in a way that I've been using Office 365 in its current version, in the 2010 version, with Office 2013, and the integration is fantastic, phenomenal. I basically now don't save anything to my desktop because saving into 365 is easier than browsing through my documents.
I did do a webcast, a public webcast that people can contact me, and I'm certainly able to provide that information. I think that you're right, fantastic feature, really good. However, there are some issues with it, especially around the naming, SkyDrive Pro versus SkyDrive versus, the existing SharePoint workspace. So at the end of the day, yes, I think in a 2013 environment, it's fantastic. But again, I think it's something that we just need to make sure that users understand how it works. But when used properly, fantastic features, and again, illustrates the power and what the cloud can really provide, and how seamless it is becoming on the desktop. So, totally agree with you on that one.
Yeah, I think our options of out-of-the-box offline functionality have become a lot better, but I think there's still room for organizations to review third-party.
Oh, sure. And again, it's what works for most people. But I think the encouraging thing is these tools are natively becoming available from Microsoft. They're being built into Office 2013, to SharePoint 2013, into iPads, into Surface devices. Microsoft is realizing that people do want to work offline or whatever. So I think you've got to give them kudos in the bigger picture for taking these risks and embracing this for being such a large corporate who traditionally makes a lot of their money from on-premise software. So I think, again, as much criticism as they get about what they do, in some cases, I think that, they do deserve some kudos for what they are doing with some of these products, especially around the SkyDrive Pro stuff.
I think in our last podcast, I mentioned how my dad runs a small business as well, and I set up Office 365 for him. And he always had issues where he constantly would email me the question, how do I send big files to clients? And to teach him in the current Office 365, to teach him, you need to log on to the site, you need to upload it to a document library. What's a document library? How do I give permissions to another person? It's a mess. Now with SkyDrive Pro, you just go from Office. You say, I want to share it on my SkyDrive Pro. It gets uploaded to your personal SharePoint and then gets shared with the people you specify. It makes so much more sense. I think we'll see that as being one of the features that will drive SharePoint 2013 adoption.
Well, that's great. And again, we need to be respectful of your time and obviously our listeners' time. We've obviously, crammed as much as we can into the time period and probably gone over a bit, but we do appreciate your time and show today. And again, if people want to get in contact with you, if they want to ask some more questions, how can they do that?
You can start at my company's website, exd.com.au. That's echo xraydelta.com.au. Otherwise, SharePoint-tips.com, that's my blog, and where I post my thoughts about SharePoint and all kind of developer-related tips, but every now and then it's not just developers. At Ishai Shaghi, that's my Twitter handle, and yeah, I'll answer you if you ask me a question.
Excellent. Well, again, I encourage everybody to take away the information that has been shared here today. I think, you know, SharePoint 2013 is a very exciting product, made even more exciting by what's coming, become available with it, available through Office 365 in the cloud. There's big opportunities for not only traditional resellers, there's developers, there's system integrators, there's the bringing together of things like CRM and Project Online. Again, SharePoint is a hub that can obviously interface directly with Office 2013 products to provide even more power, and that's something we didn't even cover in again this time that we had. And again, it just illustrates that to me, there's just so much opportunity, so much power in this product, and people really need to embrace it and get it out there for customers. And I think that more and more customers are going to be picking up this product, especially for the small business end when it becomes available through Office 365. So again, we thank Ishai for all his information and his time tonight. And basically, if there's any thought that you want to leave us with as a final thought, Ishai, before we go.
Well, I can only think that maybe some of the listeners will be very curious at seeing my dog climbing a tree. So if you Google Dashaun Canberra, we have a website with all the pictures, and somewhere among them is mine climbing a tree.
There you go. So there's your special hidden task for the search engine. Again, we thank Ishai for all his time. We thank everybody for spending the time listening to the Need to Know podcast, and we'll see you in the next episode. Thank you very much for listening. This podcast has been brought to you by the CIOps Publications. For more information, visit www.ciops.com/publications. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciops.com/contact.